Good evening. This is Rabbi Mayefsky. Guess Parshas Vayechi will be a two-parter. Obviously, I'm filling in tonight, and I'll be back on Tuesday. And Parshas Vayechi is very interesting. We begin with the word Vayechi, as opposed to what we had by at the end of the life of Abraham and Yitzchak. Of course, we never use that language. And the word Vayechi, we learn that, of course, it says, it gives us a time stamp over here, that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim now for the last 17 years of his life. He was now 147. And, of course, we're all aware of the fact that for the last 17 years, to make up that Yosef took care of his father the last 17 years, and we are told at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev that Vayeshev Yaakov, Yeretz Megurei Aviv, and he was, when Yosef was 17 years old, and God does everything midah keneged midah, measure for measure, and therefore, just the way Yaakov took care of Yosef for the first 17 years of his life, he took care of his father for the last 17 years of his life, and to make up 17. But the interesting thing is, what I meant to start with was the word Vayechi, is Vayechi is big matria. It's just very strange. And when you have a gematria like that, because it's giving us timestamps, and we don't usually get that in the Chumash. Anytime the Torah gives us a time frame, it's for a purpose, and we should know certain things, as we see in the Chumash very, very infrequently when it does it. And 17 and 17 is obviously 34, and the word Vayechi adds up to 34. And so therefore, Vayechi Yaakov Yeretz Mitzrayim Shvayesrei Shana. I entitled tonight The End of an Era, which is very interesting because what we have in last week's parsha, Yosef never lost sight of what was going on in his life. And he understood, as we mentioned last week, for those of you who heard the shiur already last week, I don't know when the shiurs are downloaded, but the fact is last week we mentioned about how Yosef was so aware of the fact of his brother's feeling for him, obviously, and he didn't reciprocate. In other words, he didn't feel the hatred for them as the way they felt for him, because his life had been, not to say a cakewalk, but certainly for the last 9 years he had been sitting on the throne, and all his hatred had dissipated. But now he wanted to see the reaction of the brothers. And when he sees something that's very interesting, when they meet in Parshas Vayigash, when the brothers meet, it's after he tells them everything, he tells them not to worry, that God sent us here, this was all these things he's trying to make them feel better, to make them understand that this was all part of God's plan, that they shouldn't feel guilty about it, and all these things, and he's looking for signs that he has gotten through to them. But there's one thing that tells us that is not the case at all. And what it is after he makes himself known and he's privately with all his brothers, it says that he fell on Binyamin, Vayipol al Savrei Binyamin Achiv, Vayev, Hu Binyamin Bachor Tzavarov, and they hugged each other and they cried on each other's shoulders. And then after that, it says that V'achrei Chein, that after that, it says Yosef, he hugged V'yanashek L'chol Echav, V'yev Galehem, and he kissed all his brothers. He hugged and kissed them and cried. And guess what? They did not reciprocate. It doesn't say anywhere that they hugged him back. They were shell-shocked. They were beyond reaction at this point in time. They just froze, and they didn't know what to do. And they were just didn't know how to react, and they were frozen. And this is what it was, because they didn't know what the future held for them at this point in time. And it was a very difficult scenario for them to face this, because, they, of course, they understood that this would be the beginning of their life in Egypt. Although Yaakov had intended to go down to Mitzrayim for a visit initially, and then he would go back to Eretz Yisrael. But the Torah tells us, Vayechi Yaakov b'Eretz Mitzrayim Shvayesrei Shana, to tell us that you might think a lot of times when we move someplace, we go back for old time's sake, we move back, we come back for a visit, you know, you go back to the old home where you grew up and you want to visit, and all the 17 years, he followed exactly what God told him, but more than that, it's whatever God predicts, that will come true. If God says this is what it's going to be, V'yosef yoshitz yodo aleinecho, That is what will come to fruition, and that's what it's telling us here, that he lived the final 17 years of his life, the entire 17 years of his life, he lived in Mitzrayim. And then he goes ahead to explain to Yosef. Yosef comes to visit, and his brothers didn't see him. But the fact remains that Yosef says something very interesting to his brothers. After he sees that they don't reciprocate his feelings, he tells them that, you know what, Bavur Teshu B'Eretz Goshen, you're going to live in the land of Goshen. Now, why would that be? Perhaps, you know, the thought process could be that he would tell them, you know, since there's a famine and I don't want you to have to fend for yourself, you live in the palace. But one thing that is very, very important here at this juncture is that Yosef is seeing their feelings and what his reaction is. If they come to live with me in the palace and they feel that I'm over their watchful eye and they have to be subservient to the king, which is me, to the viceroy, it's going to increase the hatred, just like the Ksonas Possum did. If they see me every day dressed in my royal robes and they are just regular civilians and marching around in the palace and they have to bow every time I pass by, and that will cause a major resentment. I don't want them near me. I want them to live their own lives, be separated. And that is what Yosef, he keeps his eye on the prize constantly. He understands human nature. He understands psychology, and he doesn't want them to go through this again. And he tells them, Bavur Teshu B'Eretz Goshen, we'll see each other occasionally, but live your own life and let them live on their own. And we see that when bringing up children also. Sometimes we like to refer to it as tough love, but regardless, that is not the point here. He just wants them to be on their own, to feel like they're getting along on their own and not to look at Yosef all this time. And obviously they're not upset about it. The only people he focuses on is his own two children, Menashe and Ephraim. And even so, Ephraim seems to have grown a great attachment to Yaakov in these 17 years as opposed to Menashe, who lives in the palace. But as we get along in the parasha, Yaakov asks Yosef that when the time comes that I'll die, I want to make sure that I'm buried in Eretz Yisrael. You might think, and some of the Mefarshim make an interesting point over here, that why did he specifically say to Yosef, of course Yosef would be the one who had the capability, because Yaakov was venerated as almost like a god because the famine stopped when he came down to Egypt. Although there are Mefarshim that say even that after Yaakov died, the famine returned, but that's not the common belief certainly. But nevertheless, at this point in time, he wanted them to be well taken care of. And so Yaakov calls Yosef to his bedside and asks him to please, don't be like, I know I buried your mother on the way, but don't treat me that way. And why would Yaakov think that Yosef might not acquiesce to his things about burying him in Eretz Yisrael? He believed that Yosef would eventually do it, but he wanted to make sure that he didn't live one second. He wasn't buried for one second in Eretz Mitzrayim, because he sees the future that Yosef will be buried in Mitzrayim, and therefore, for that reason, he could see the future that they take his bones, they carry him later on. He wanted to make sure that the same fate does not befall him. Possibly, what the thought occurred to me, that the fact that Yosef had to stay in Mitzrayim and even carrying his coffin 40 years in the Midbar would not be the way his end would be. And that could be some sort of payment back for Yosef, because we know when you're buried, that is part of the forgiveness when the body is buried. And here it is, they're dragging him out of the ground and schlepping his bones through the Midbar for 40 years. And that could be some sort of payment for Yosef for some of his misdeeds, even though he's a great tzaddik, because we know that there's payback for everything that happens. Now, Yaakov asks Yosef to bury him in Eretz Yisrael, which he certainly acquiesces. But before that, he gathers everybody together to give them the bracha. And it's, Hey, Yosfu v'yagidu lochem eis asher yikro eschem b'yachris hayomim. At this point in time, he tries to tell them what's going to happen at the end of his days. And at that point, he loses the nevuah. But he makes one very interesting declaration at the beginning of the parsha when it says, "Niroi lai belus b'eretz Kanan." We don't know how many times actually God came to Yaakov in a vision, how many times he actually had a nevuah. It could be only a couple of times when he had the dream, of course, by the Sulam, and after the Maisa with Shechem, that God came to him, and certainly when he left Lavan. But we get the impression many times that God speaks to these people on a regular basis, but of course that's not the case. One message, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words, and therefore God expects you to take the message and carry it for a long time, perhaps, like we are told in the Midbar, that possibly that Moshe was not in communication with God for approximately 37 or 38 years in the Midbar. They were wandering around with no direction, so to speak. They just followed the cloud as they were told. But what I'm pointing out over here is Yaakov is now mulling over his life and seeing that this is not what he thought. He thought at some point in his life that he favored Yosef because it could be for a period of time he thought that Yosef would follow in his footsteps, meaning being the next one of the Avos. Not that he would understand that he's one of the Avos, but certainly the next in line to take the reins of leadership for the family. But of course, he sees, as we see in the parasha, when he gives out the brachas to the brothers, he says to them, Yehuda ato yoducha achecha. Even though Yehuda and the brothers, you would think that he would talk to them privately, would not this cause also some grief between the brothers, especially after he rails at Reuven, Shimon, and Levi and tells them all the bad things that they did and actually criticizes Shimon and Levi about Yosef ki bi'apam hargu uvirtzonam ikru shar, which is a reference to Yosef. Obviously, we're told here that Yaakov knew the entire story of what happened, but if Yehuda is going to be the leader, they don't quite understand because it was Yehuda that said, L'chuvenim karenu la'yishmi elim v'yodeinu al tihibo. So Yehuda should certainly get criticized for that if they found out, if Yaakov knew the whole story, why wasn't he singled out and instead being lionized, literally and figuratively speaking, being lionized and made into the future leader as opposed to Yosef? Because as opposed to all the other brothers, even Yosef himself, Yehuda was always willing to take the reins of leadership when he said, Anochi Erevenu, and even if it meant giving up his own life, but he was aware of his own mistakes. Yosef, it seems, was not necessarily aware of all of his errors and where he went wrong. He might have thought so, but he continued on his, not to say on his merry way, but he continued until the end of his days, and certainly saving Klal Yisrael for a great many things that might have befallen them had he not been around. But it seems that the brothers, for whatever reason, still, if you see when Yaakov dies at the end of the parasha, the brothers have to come and say, Avicha tzival lefnei moso leimor kosom ruli Yosef, which is always a very strange thing for them to say. He should have spoken to Yosef, rather. And Yosef knows that, and that's why it says, Vayef Yosef bedabra meilov, that Yosef cried when they spoke this because he knew this is a lie. And that actually tells him that they still harbor resentment over Yosef, that he is the leader now. And now, at this point in time, what it does help is that Yehuda has taken the reins of leadership here, and they are still treating him that way, which will cause the eventual breakup of the family many years down the road. And there's one other very interesting fact just to point out. When the Yaakov gives the brachas, we'll talk about the brachas later on in the week, but one thing that strikes, that stands out when it says, by God gedud yigudenu v'hu yogur okev. God in particular, he had many sons. He had seven sons, if we see the list of 70. And of course, there's one very interesting thing about the list of 70. If we look at the list, it's a list of, seemingly it says, b'shivim nefesh yardu avosecha mitzrayim. But the reality is, Aaron Onan never made it down to Mitzrayim. What happened with them? We know what happened with them, rather. But the point being that why are they considered from the people who went down to Mitzrayim? That's impossible. it's only then 67 names that are actually listed. I mean, 67 people that actually, that we know in the list that actually went down to Mitzrayim. So why are Aaron Onan listed? Because we know halachically, when somebody is Miyabim, his brother's wife, and the first child is called after that father, and that's why it uses the language B'shivim Nefesh. It doesn't say B'shivim Ish Yardu Avosecha Mitzrayim. It was only 67 that went down. Of course, we know that Yocheved, she was born Ben Achomos, it says, but nevertheless, we have one thing that's very interesting. Since we say that the first child is called after them, all the nefashos went down, even Aaron Onan, because of Yehuda had a relation with Tamar, and Peretz and Zerach were born from that relationship, from that one-night stand, and Al-Achiv Shem L'Hakim Li-Achiv Shem. So the spirit, the nefesh of Aaron Onan was alive, and that's why their names are listed, B'Shivim Nefesh Yardu Avosecha Mitzrayim. Their souls went down. They may not have gone down as live human beings, but their souls did, and that is the reason for the terminology B'Shivim Nefesh Yardu Avosecha Mitzrayim. And of course, we read Chazak, which we will discuss on Tuesday night. Have a good evening and a good Matzah Shabbos.